Hi, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you for, I guess, what is our state of the team address, Phil?
I don't think it's going to be very difficult to determine what the state of the team is.
Yes, not the state good. Of the team is 11-9. Not too good. We're going to talk about the loss to Villanova today. We're also going to talk about the future of the team. What should Marquette do going forward, and preview the next two games, which are Providence and St. John's, which hopefully should be a fun game no matter what Marquette's situation is, because it's kind of part of Fox Sports 1's hype leading up to the Super Bowl. We'll get to that later in the show. First, Phil, a thing most recently in our minds, unfortunately, I just can't wash away the memories of the disappointing loss to Villanova. I think going into it, we both predicted losses for Marquette, but the fact that Marquette came so close to winning the game and then didn't just kind of amped up the frustration, I think.
Well, I think, first of all, I'm going to go full Bull Durham here, and how do we win 11? It's a miracle. But second, I think the Villanova game was actually triply frustrating. I think it was frustrating because we had a shot to win and we didn't. It was doubly frustrating because we kind of didn't play all that spectacularly throughout the game. And then it was triply frustrating because Villanova let us in. So we really, on paper, that game looks better than it actually was, because at various points, Marquette was down 10, 11, 12 points, would make a nice run to get back in things, would get within 4 or 5. It took some monumentally terrible free throw shooting to let Marquette back in that game. So, it was good, it was bad, it was good, it was really bad. It was just all frustrating.
Yeah, and you know, Marquette got the gift of a late charge call, which of course allowed the game to go to overtime, and otherwise the game should have been won in regulation. And what would we be talking about if that bucket had counted as it probably should have? We've probably been talking about how badly Marquette did not stopping the ball on that play and just letting him go straight to the hoop.
Right. I mean, not to bag on Steve Taylor, but he had three options there: step up and stop the dribble penetration, hedge out a little bit to try and force the commit from the driving player, or the third option was go up for a shot block. He chose secret option three, which was do none of the above, put yourself in the worst position possible, and get bailed out by an official's call.
And it worked.
It worked. It's just how Buzz drew it up. So, and that play in of itself was frustrating, because you went through the whole trajectory of, why is he getting a penetration? Steve Taylor's going to be there. No, he's not. Oh, God, he went up. No, he made the shot. Then there's the whistle. You see the charge call. It was bonkers. It was insane in person.
And sometimes I think, you know, you just kind of have to tip your cap to the other team in some regards. Villanova played very well, especially Villanova's guards. Archidiakono just tore Marquette up late in the game. You know, Bell was on fire for most of it, but Archidiakono just played great. He made, honestly, he made Todd Mayo look really bad in overtime, and really just Marquette's entire backcourt struggled to defend any of Villanova's guards all day. 70 points between Bell, Hilliard, and Archidiakono.
Well, first of all, congratulations on pronouncing his name correctly. That's why you're a professional and I suck. I'm just going to call him Arch or Archie. Yeah, well, and part of that is the overtime. I have a real bone to pick with Buzz. I don't often blame Buzz for a lot of things, but the overtime result I really have to put in the coach's corner. Because as you mentioned, Mayo, you know, I think most of the game, and it's, I'm not going back and looking at the tape, I don't want my eyes to start bleeding again, but I think most of the game, Derek Wilson was on Archie, and Mayo was guarding Bell or Hilliard. And then late in the game and in all of overtime, they switched and put Mayo on Archie, who decided that he was the second coming of Allen Iverson. And so I did, why the defensive switch? And then if you're going to make that defensive switch, why not put Dawson in the overtime when we need a shooter where the defense is less critical because he's not guarding their best guard?
Yeah, that was the thing. It, you know, we actually talked about it on Twitter during the game. Was, you know, it was late in the game. I think it was either late in regulation or some point in overtime. Marquette needed a bucket, and I'm just like, I hate to be a guy who says always put in the backups, but man, Taylor and Dawson should be on the floor, and I think Taylor was. But the fact that Dawson really wasn't out there when Marquette needed a bucket was concerning for me, because I thought he showed enough in the Georgetown game to earn more than 8 minutes in a tough game like that.
Yeah, I I guess I it's a situational thing for me. I thought he in regulation, I thought he played the appropriate amount of minutes. I just think in overtime, and I guess you could make the argument when we needed the comeback, that it makes sense for him to be in there as well, just as a third potential shooter to stretch the floor. Because they were blanketing Jake Thomas. Whatever you think about Jake Thomas, they were really respecting his shot and were blanketing everything he did, leaving really Mayo as the only other shooter on the floor for the comeback. You could make the argument that Dawson would have been appropriate there because the defense was relatively porous anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Jake couldn't get open. I don't think he even got a shot off until late in the regulation or in overtime, and neither one of them went in. So, I mean, Jake was pretty much a non-factor offensively. And, you know, on the bright side, Todd Mayo continues to hit big shots late. I mean, he's got that going on. So,
right.
I mean, and Devontae Gardner got to the basket and got fouled and had 11 free throws in the game. So, I mean, that is a key to success, really, normally, is when Gardner's getting to the line and getting over 20 points. And if Todd Mayo's scoring, you know, over 15, he had 18 in that game, that's normally a pretty good recipe. It just wasn't enough because Nova's guards, I mean, they were just too good. And I think in that regard, you just kind of say, well, Marquette lost to a better team.
Yeah. Well, and two things. One, you know, and far be it for me to be accused of being a Jake Thomas apologist. Anyone that's listened to the podcast, I think would realize that I'm not necessarily. But I obviously would still love to see us being able to put people in a position to take some of Jake's minutes. I do think that he was effective even without shooting on the offensive end because Nova was guarding him so tightly out on the perimeter. It forced them to be unable to help down on Devontae or Otoole or Jamil Wilson. So that opened up the interior offense a little bit better, and I think you see some of that result with Devontae Gardner. But yeah, Nova was the better team, and quite honestly, in some regards, I think they were also the more aggressive and assertive team. They seemed to get to every 50-50 ball, and I understand when you're a long-range shooting team like Villanova tends to be, you're going to get long rebounds that take funny bounces, but they seemed to get to every 50-50 ball. The perfect example was the Archie character at the end in overtime there, go sliding across the court, grab the ball, call a timeout, when I think it was Derek Wilson and Jamil Wilson both had shots at gathering up that rebound and would have been a critical juncture in the overtime. So, Villanova just looked, if we're being unbiased, Villanova looked like the better team the whole way. They just got unlucky with us taking them to overtime.
Yeah, and Villanova was the better team coming in. They're still the better team. It's just, you know, I really didn't expect Marquette to win that game, and I certainly don't expect Marquette to beat a team of that caliber. And I think we can officially kind of close the book now on any hope of being an at-large NCAA team because, you know, Marquette would essentially have to win out, and even then it might not still be enough. I'm not closing the book because that was a bad loss. I'm closing the book because I don't think there are enough opportunities on the schedule for Marquette to get great wins and really climb into the at-large pool. So I think now the focus for Marquette is really improving and finding something that works before the Big East tournament. And the wins and losses really don't matter that much as long as Marquette finishes in the top six in the conference, which I think hopefully is realistic. But I think this loss really shuts the door on even the most optimistic people who think, well, Marquette can make a late run here and you know, get in the at-large pool. I just think that's out the window at this point.
Well, I guess I tend to agree. I think I guess I'm an optimist. I still think there's a slight chance. I think we're literally one win or one loss away from being totally eliminated. You know, from an at-large perspective, it's not only getting into the at-large consideration, but being a team that gets selected at-large. I think we're out right now from being selected. I think we might still be, if we went on a run, we might still be in consideration.
Yeah, I think that would involve winning 11 in a row, though.
Yeah.
It's only got 11 conference games yet, and I can't see this team winning 11. I mean, that includes a trip to Villanova and hosting Creighton again, two teams that I don't think Marquette is capable of beating, even on its best day.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Like I said, I think I'm just I need one more loss just to kill all hope and optimism I have left in my continuously freezing body.
Well, I admire your optimism, and maybe Marquette can prove me wrong and win 11 in a row or 10 out of 11 to close the season and have a nice run in the Big East tournament. But I just don't see it out of this team from what I've seen. Because as we've said multiple times, Marquette has essentially failed every test that they've been presented. I mean, if you want to call Georgetown a test, sure, but Georgetown's lost 5 in a row and maybe looking at 6 in a row. Georgetown is currently 3-6 in the league, and Marquette just doesn't have many good wins, or they really don't have any good wins, and there just aren't many good wins coming. And even if they've shown in a couple of games where they've played some good teams close, they've still lost, and that's really all that matters in the end. I just don't think they're going to have enough wins.
Right. Well, I guess the best way to describe my feeling, I think I'm generally in agreement. My feeling is statistically they've got a shot, but to your point, as a team, there's no reason to believe they will actually convert on that shot.
Right. Yeah. There's just that tiny 0.1% chance that maybe they go on a miraculous run. Now, I guess the talk in the Twitter sphere and the message boards and maybe Buzz's inbox is what this team is going to have to do to get there, to say pull off this miraculous run that you're talking about, Phil. And, you know, the Anonymous Eagle wrote an intriguing article today, or I'd say that Tuesday when we're recording this, about, you know, play the freshman war, which is something people tend to say. I've said it. Maybe it's a situational thing. Maybe it's not just a blanket statement that you should play the freshman war. But the gist of the article, if you haven't read it, was it's time to bench the guys who aren't going to be here next year or may not be big factors next year and play guys like Dawson and Burton and, if he's healthy, Juwan Johnson a little more. What do you think about that, Phil?
I guess I'm slightly modified of that. I do want to see the freshmen play more, and maybe I'm misinterpreting some of what Anonymous Eagle is saying, but, you know, I think the freshmen need to see more minutes, but I don't think it's a case where, okay, Derek Wilson, sit on the bench down there by Juan Anderson and don't move for 35 minutes of the game. I think we modify things. Actually, the one that I'm most clear-cut on one is the one that's least likely to happen right now because of injury is I would be all for, at this point, just completely shutting down Jake Thomas, except for spot minutes, and putting Juwan Johnson in. But, you know, to get him some run and get him used to it, but he's got the ankle injury, which we have no idea what the extent of that injury is, so I don't know if he's coming back, you know, from that at all or what the deal. That's the most clear cut, but the other ones, it's like I'd like to see a moderation of minutes, but I don't know that you go just flip a switch and say, because that to me feels a little bit too much like waving a white flag.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say this. One thing that the article assumes is that everyone on the roster is going to be back next year, and maybe there are just some guys who aren't playing right now that maybe Buzz doesn't need back or doesn't really want back and doesn't see him fitting in. Because, you know, there are transfers every year, and maybe some guys are going to transfer who don't fit in. And maybe that's why some guys aren't playing. Well, guys will remain to see if that's true in the offseason. But in the interim, yeah, basically, if we're going to assume all the freshmen are coming back next year as sophomores, I think absolutely you need to play Dawson more. I think he's shown enough that he can help you win more than Derek Wilson can. I think there's a good chance Derek Wilson could be Marquette's third-string point guard next year.
That's the interesting question, right? That's where I come up with the whole point guard situation is if Dwayne Wilson is what has been advertised, if he's a very solid point guard, who, you know, is he the starter? You know, he's going to have a full year under his belt. Presumably, he's been practicing this whole time. Then is John Dawson the preemptive backup? Is Derek Wilson the backup? I think Derek Wilson is a competent 10 to 15 minutes a game backup. He's a better defender than John Dawson. I don't know. I don't know who sits first, second, and third string next year.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I guess that's Buzz's problem to worry about. And I give Buzz the benefit of the doubt on these minutes sometimes. You know, I'm sure there's reasons why these guys don't play. Maybe it's the work ethic and practice or whatnot. I agree with maybe slowing down Burton lately because Burton has been a little frustrating the last few games. You talked about his freshman wall in the previous podcast, Phil, and I think we saw some credence to that. I think I'm kind of in favor of what Buzz is doing with Burton. Give him 5 minutes, see if he's productive, and if not, sit him back down.
Right. Well, I guess that's the other side of the coin that I'm concerned about with the freshmen is there is a counterproductive nature to playing the freshmen too much or too quickly. I don't think any one of them has shown that they're a all-star, can't keep them off the court type of talent. They're
Right.
all clearly talented, but they have moments of brilliance and moments of suckiness. And you got to try and manage it. And Burton's had some struggles of late. If you leave him in there 6, 8, 10 minutes and he's consistently struggling and he's a black hole on offense like he's been, what do you gain by those extra 3 minutes of him doing the same thing as he's doing with 5 minutes? I mean, games, no matter how far out of it, games are not the time to be coaching players up.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid point. I mean, these guys should be making their mistakes in practice and then executing in the games. And I think to your point earlier about not giving up on the season, Marquette is still trying to make the Big East tournament or get a high seed in the Big East tournament as high as they possibly can, and still try to win that thing and try to get in the NCAA tournament. I mean, they haven't given up on the season, so the goal for the season is still to somehow find a way into the NCAA tournament. At this point, I think winning the Big East tournament is the most likely way for that to happen. But so I don't think you can give up that much. You still have to try to win games and make sure you're not in the bottom four of the league, where you'd have to win 4 games in 4 days in New York. You don't want that to happen. So, and Buzz has shown that whether it's again, whether it's the fault of the freshman or whether it's just Buzz's trust issues, he just doesn't trust the freshman late in games. I mean, he's convinced that Derek Wilson and Jake Thomas are the way to go, and those guys are going to get him the march. And I haven't seen it, and that's what Anonymous Eagle said in the blog on Tuesday, is essentially they're not winning, and that's the problem. It's not like we're begging them to get more minutes and forsake a guy like Vander Blue or some, or Jay Crowder. We're asking guys who really aren't winning games to maybe cut back on their minutes a little bit and see if some of these guys can turn some of those flashes they've shown into a little more consistent success. And I guess the hope is, for fans who write this stuff and myself and I think a lot of other people out there, is if these guys are given a chance to play a little more, then we'll see a little more consistency and this team will be a little bit better next year. And there won't be as much freshman jitters, because if you think Buzz has trust issues now, I mean, half the roster could be freshmen next
Right.
year.
Well, and I think that's extremely revealing in Anonymous Eagle's article is what players will have back next year in terms of experience. I mean, next year they're gonna have to play in experience, and so you make the argument you get the experience now for next year. But I guess the other thing that's kind of been boiling up, especially with the point guard situation, is this kind of theory that because John Dawson had that great Georgetown game, obviously, and I chalk it up to, one, he's talented, and two, I do think some of that was a favorable scenario for him, because he's gotten a couple of minutes in other games like Butler and Xavier, where I've not been all that thrilled with his, or I didn't think his offensive proficiency was justified the defensive proficiency issues as well as the turnovers. But there seems to be this theory that if they play more continuous minutes, the mistakes will stop or will go away. And I don't know, I guess for me, I struggle with the, if he plays 3 minutes of a game at one point and plays a certain way, I have struggle thinking that if he plays 6 minutes continuously, that will be a totally different outcome than the 3 minute sample size.
Well, I think the way I see it anyway is I think you're willing to deal with some of those freshman mistakes for some of the higher ceiling rewards. I think, Derek Wilson is just a guy in the middle. I mean, he's a guy who's not going to really kill you on either end, but he's not going to do anything great to win you games, especially offensively. Whereas Dawson, for example, yes, he's going to make some mistakes. He's going to lose his guy on defense, and maybe he'll turn the ball over when he's running the point, but he offers that next level, that higher ceiling, that I think that's what people are reaching for. They see guys like Dawson and Johnson and Burton and see there's a ceiling that they haven't reached yet, and if you put them out there, they're going to reach it, and they could reach new heights, and this team could be so much better. Whether that's true or not, that's what everyone sees. But with a guy like Derek Wilson and Jake Thomas, I think they're looked at as more like finished products, and they're not going to get any better. And there's what you see is what you get. I mean, Jake Thomas and Derek Wilson are not going to turn into guys who suddenly are averaging 15 a game and are offensive threats that other teams have to prepare for. And I think that's kind of what people are wanting more, is the chance to get to the freshman ceilings, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. And I generally agree with that. The other thing I would ask is kind of the follow-up and just your opinion. What do you think Buzz is seeing these guys in practice and seeing them in games, and do you think his goal, like, and this is going to be a tough question to ask, is his, or how to phrase it correctly, his goal is what, to win as many games as possible this season? Do you think he's gotten to the point where he's like, all right, we need to start preparing for next season? Because one would make the argument, if he's a smart guy and he knows what he's doing, I'm trying to figure out, he's putting the players on the floor in the best position he thinks to win games, if that's the ultimate goal. So are we kind of coming down to that Buzz is wrong in that? In that he, you know, is misevaluating the talent? Or is this a case where we just want to experimentally see what else is out there?
Yeah, I think fans and, you know, all of us out here are maybe calling for the experiment and maybe sacrificing some losses. But I think to get at what I think you're asking is, you know, Buzz, and this is going to be a coach speak answer, but it's, I think, what Buzz would say. His only priority is winning the next game, and he doesn't care about the next 10, and he doesn't care about next year. Because he can't deal with anything to do with next year until he sees what the roster is going to look like. He doesn't know who might transfer on him and who might transfer in, and exactly what the roster is going to look like next year. He has a vague idea, but you know, he thought Vander Blue was going to be here this year and Jameel McKay, and neither one of them are. So I don't think he's worrying about next year too much. He'll worry about next year in the off season and in boot camp next fall. I think what he's worrying about now is beating Providence, and then after that he'll worry about beating St. John's, and then he'll just stack up the chips at the end and see if Marquette can make a run in the Big East tournament and get into the dance. I think, to answer your question, I think Buzz's only priority is just to win the next game, and he doesn't really care about what people say about developing freshmen or whatever for next year. He's probably thinking, look, if these freshmen are all back next year, I'll work with them in the off season and they'll be ready next fall. I think that's probably his thought.
Right. Well, and I guess, and I agree with that. And that's where I struggle with going the all in. Like, I'm 99% there with the, you know, all right, let's kind of burn it down, play the freshman kind of mode, which can still yield positive results. Just because you're playing the freshman doesn't mean you're going to lose every game. I mean, right. Clearly they're talented and they can win. But then,
ironically, playing Wilson and Thomas may mean you lose every game.
That's true. I mean, that is absolutely true. Staying with what you've been doing that hasn't been totally successful, you could argue is kind of insane to keep.
That may be a little harsh, but I was just making a joke.
Right, but it's true. We could lose every game with them. But I guess the where I'm coming from is, Buzz sees these guys every day and in practice and has ungodly amounts of stats that we could only, you know, pass out from, you know, just sheer trying to understand. And he's making the decision that Derek Wilson, I can only presume his motivation is to win the game, and he's decided that Derek Wilson gives him the better shot than John Dawson does.
Yep.
So the question is, I guess, for all the fans clamoring, it's either you want the experiment, which is fine, or you think Buzz Williams is just dead wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think a lot of people think that Buzz is wrong, and I think maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but I think most people think his faith in Derek is a little misguided, and I think what people would like to see is just him just to go with it a little more open-minded and maybe split the minutes 50-50 and see how each guy plays, and you know, give it 2, 3, 4, 5 games. And if John Dawson is a total train wreck after 5 games, and I think everyone will shut up and say, all right, we get it. But if John Dawson wins you a couple games, I think you got to be a little more open-minded and say, look, maybe this guy can win me some more games than Derek Wilson, even if Derek Wilson beats him every day in practice. Some guys play better than they practice, and some guys practice better than they play. And I think Derek is the latter. I think Jake is the latter.
Yes.
I think those are guys who bust it in practice every day and make everyone look bad in practice, but they doesn't translate to the game. And sometimes you have to, you know, guys like, I would guess Todd Mayo is probably a guy who maybe doesn't give it everything Buzz wants in practice. Maybe Dawson's one of those guys too. But, you know, Rudy didn't start. You know, you put the guys out there who were going to play. You know, Rudy busted it every day in practice, but he wasn't good enough.
Are we really using Notre Dame of any sort as a comparison for this podcast?
If there was a great movie about a Marquette walk-on who, you know, fought his way onto the varsity team, I would have used that. But I just think that's a reference everyone would get.
You get it. We're just going to have to burn down the podcast afterwards.
That's fine. People can, you know, block me on Twitter if they want, or Twitter bomb me or whatever they want. But my point is, not to say that those guys are Rudy, but you have to – I mean, you got to play the guys who are going to get you wins. And I think at this point of the season, you have to admit that Derek Wilson and Jake Thomas aren't winning games. They're just not.
Yeah. I agree.
And like, even if you don't want to play the freshman, how about play Todd Mayo more? Gosh, the guy has hit some big shots lately.
Right, yeah. You know? Well, and that's an extremely valid point we shouldn't walk past. I mean, Todd Mayo in the Villanova game only had 22 minutes. And I say only, I mean, that's a considerable number of minutes, but Derek Wilson and Jake Thomas had 39 minutes. I mean, even I'm not buying my decoy theory in the Nova game for 39 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jake had, this box score I'm looking at, Jake had 29, Derek had 36.
Oh, you know, still. I mixed them up in my head.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, Gardner had 39, which is a good number for him. I mean, Gardner needs to play that much, and Gardner had a great game. But your point is valid. Your point, I mean, when you look at the minutes, yeah, Todd Mayo's a guy. As much as we talk about playing the freshman, we probably should talk a little bit more about playing Todd Mayo a little more, because he may be one of the most skilled guys on the roster, honestly. And yeah, the thing is, we all know the flaws with Todd Mayo, because as much as he can have a game like Villanova, where he goes 7 of 10, hits a big three-pointer, hits his free throws, he could just as easily go out in the next game and have a 2-for-15 performance, and everyone's wondering what the heck happened.
Right. Well, I mean, I would like to see, honestly, and I honestly think that we need to change, I mean, would you change the starting lineup? Would you, you know, so Derek and Jake start? I think I would, too. If nothing else, I think Mayo needs to start ahead of Thomas. For yes. Sure. I'm okay with Derek starting still over Dawson. But I think
I think that would be a, you know what I think would be the most welcome starting lineup, and one thing we haven't touched on this podcast but we have before, is a little more Steve Taylor.
Yes.
Just to break up Otule and Gardner, because I'm still not sold on them playing together. I just think Gardner is the best when he can just be at the five, camp out down there, and he doesn't have to guard the four on the other.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. When Gardner has to guard the stretch four, which we saw against Villanova, is A, he gets tired, and B, while he's super athletic for a man of his size, he's still a man of his size.
He
can't guard the stretch four especially. And be successful on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, and so I think the lineup that I think a lot of fans would be comfortable with, and I think that would make sense, maybe even to Buzz, would be a starting lineup of Derek Wilson, Todd Mayo, Jamil Wilson, Steve Taylor, and Otule.
I sign 100% off on this, and then the first two off the bench are Gardner and Dawson.
Yes. And will that happen? Probably not.
No.
Maybe all the people filling up Buzz's inbox are just saying exactly what we're saying, and he just does it out of defiance. He's like, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm going to win with Derek Wilson and Jake Thomas, and I'm going to show everybody, and I hope he does. I'm just not sold on that happening.
Well, right. I agree. Well, and it's also, you know, it's kind of one of these catch-22s, because if he switches to John Dawson, you know, whether he pays attention to what the crowd says at all or not, you know, and Dawson is successful, then everyone kind of goes, oh, see, I told you, Buzz doesn't know what he's talking about. If he doesn't make the switch and Derek can't win, they can't win with Derek, then it's like, see, Buzz is too stubborn. The right. only outcome that is quote-unquote positive is if he switches to John Dawson and the team sucks. And how is that a positive?
Right, yeah. Like, yeah, he starts all the freshmen, plays them the entire game, benches Derek Wilson for an entire game, and Marquette gets roped by 20 points by Providence. And then what would we say? We're like, all right, more Derek, more Jake, more Oxtule together. Just do whatever. Team's not going anywhere.
Right. I mean, close up. At that point, do we just say, you know what, let's forfeit the season? You know, it's...
Yeah, I would be like, I'm out of suggestions. No more suggestions. But it's fun to at least suggest things, and maybe they work out, and maybe we see some of those changes in the upcoming games.
But I'm totally on board with your suggested starting lineup. I think that's a critical change that, if nothing else, reflects a compromise position.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is a good compromise. Don't start John Dawson, fine. Just make him the first guy off the bench. And I think a lot of people would like to see Todd Mayo just get the opportunity to thrive.
Right.
Because when Mayo's right, we've seen these last couple games, Mayo can be very, very good. And he can hit some big shots. And he's volume shooter alert. I mean, he can be a guy who can go out there and drop 20 on you. So I'd like to see him get an opportunity to do that. But, you know, we'll see if that happens in the next two games. Let's talk about the next two games, Phil. Thursday, they're going to take on Providence at home, which a game that may look a lot tougher now than it did when the schedule came out back in November. Providence actually looking like possibly a tournament team right now. They're 15-5 and 5-2 in the league, including some nice wins. They really crushed Georgetown, and they beat Creighton.
Yeah. I mean, Providence is going to be a tough get. I think one of the big questions is going to be, which is why I also fear that I don't think we'll see much John Dawson in this game. If you buy the hype that Derek Wilson is a much better defender, Bryce Cotton for Providence is their assist leader, points leader. It feels like he's in his seventh year at Providence. So he's going to be a tough matchup on the defensive end. Providence and Marquette are relatively similar in terms of styles. Neither one shoots the three-point basket very well. Both rebound pretty well. In fact, Marquette's third in the Big East, and Providence is fourth in the Big East in terms of rebounds per game. So I think it's going to be a clash of similarities. I think one thing that's going to be difficult for Marquette is they got a Providence, I'm blanking on his name, but they got a pretty good shot blocker, and Marquette has traditionally struggled with shot blockers, mostly because we can't shoot a jump shot to save our life.
Yeah, Carson Desrosiers is the gentleman you're thinking of.
Yes. I'm going to call him Des.
Des works. He's a 7-footer from New Hampshire. Actually, that name sounds familiar. I think Marquette might have actually been recruiting him once upon a time.
Probably. I feel like we've pretty much tried to recruit everybody.
Yeah, but yes, shot blocker in the middle can be troublesome, of course, because, you know, those guys can, when they have big guys like that, it can really frustrate Gardner when he's got a guy that is noticeably taller than him and has long arms and can really slow him down what he likes to do, and that's just really barrel into guys, draw fouls, and you know, get those three-point plays. That's really, as much as we talk about the guard play, that's really the number one thing that has to happen in every game if Marquette is going to win, is Gardner getting to the free throw line and getting above that 20-point barrier.
Yeah. Well, Gardner, the offense should entirely flow through Gardner. He should touch the ball in the post at least once every single possession. Now, against Villanova, you saw the scoring go up because they were able to do that. Against a team with a bigger or better front line and very active guards, similar to Providence, I don't know that they're going to be as successful doing that.
Mm. Yeah, and I'll be interested to see how Providence, they have some of the length down low, and with the guards they have, how they attack Marquette defensively. I think we've seen a lot of zone against Marquette, and I would anticipate some of that, and just I would anticipate Providence packing it in a little bit like a lot of other teams do and just daring Marquette to shoot and daring Marquette to beat him from the outside. And as long as Gardner doesn't get to the line and isn't able to get the ball down low, I think that would be a good recipe for success for Providence.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, like I said, I think Providence and Marquette are relatively similar. So, it may be just each team throwing right crosses at each other the entire time. So it'll be an interesting game, and this is going to be, I think, the turning point for a lot of fans. I think there are a lot of fans that are already like, the season's essentially done. Move on. Let's do whatever we can for next year. I think this will be the game that'll make or break. If we lose, everyone will be off the bandwagon. I don't think there'll be anyone left, including myself, saying, well, you're telling me there's a chance. But if they beat Providence, because Providence is a decent team, I think there will be some lingering folks going, well, hang on now. Give it just a second. We got something.
Yeah. People might start getting a little excited. All right, maybe Buzz is cranking it up a little bit. He's, Marquette's patented, you know, late February,
right,
early March run, maybe starting now. Yeah, I could see some of that happening if Marquette beats Providence. I still think it's a long way to go, and too many things need to happen that I don't think can happen. But it is an important game as far as keeping hope alive. You know, you don't want to lose two back-to-back games at home. I'm trying to think of the last time Marquette lost back-to-back games at home. It's probably have to go back quite a ways because losses at home have been so rare for Marquette under Williams and Crean, really. I'm sure we could probably find one in recent history, maybe that year that they went to the NIT with
Western
after
Michigan.
Wade left. Yeah, it might be around that time where they lost back-to-back home games. But, you know, maybe that year that they was Buzz's second year when they were an 11 seed and were one and done. But, you know, I don't feel like doing research. I'm sure somebody out there can
find
it.
Somebody, bottom line is, somebody can tweet us whether you're right or wrong.
Yeah. Bottom line is, you don't want to lose back-to-back games at home. You want to keep hope alive. You want to keep moving forward. You want to keep improving. And hopefully Marquette can find some kind of formula that is successful, as we've suggested, as everyone has suggested, really, to maybe, you know, get some of those guys who aren't contributing to contribute a little more and beat a good team like Providence. I think that would maybe lift the spirits of this team and the fan base.
Well, yeah, because I have to say, being at the game against the Villanova, I mean, Villanova is a top 10 team, should be a lot of excitement. You know, the first half, it was, I mean, there was a couple of points where the Bradley Center got up and got excited. But until Marquette really started making a run late in the second half, the Bradley Center was pretty contained. I think that speaks volumes to just kind of the overall status of the fan base. I think everyone's just kind of on their edge, like, oh, I want to be excited, but I can't, but I can't not be excited. You know, and you know, kind of to the point, if you look at the schedule, if they beat Providence, they've got a potential for a mini run, which does not put them in contention. I don't want anyone to confuse my saying it puts them into tournament contention, but it is the potential for a small enough run that everyone starts going, hey, what do we got here?
Yeah, and I think the most realistic thing we can hope for is just get a little momentum going. I really think that's the most important thing. Just get some momentum going heading into New York at the end of the season.
Right. Well, we've literally had alternating win-loss since December 17th. If you look at the schedule, we've won every other game.
Yeah. And it needs to stop because 500 teams don't typically looked upon too kindly by the selection committee for the NCAA tournament or the NIT. You know, you have to be above 500 to be in a postseason tournament. So
that is true.
You don't want to fall. You don't want to fall too far behind there. And then the next game after Providence is, of course, well, you know, one should be exciting just because it's a showcase game. Marquette will be taking on St. John's at Madison Square Garden as part of kind of, you know, Fox Sports 1. Fox Sports is going to hype up the Super Bowl weekend coverage, and so it'll be a great opportunity to get a nice win. I mean, you know, St. John's isn't that good of a team this year, but still, any road win in conference play is a nice win, I guess. And when you can do it on national television, it would be all the better. And we'll all be Hoya fans that day as well as Georgetown. Poor Hoyas. I feel bad for them, honestly. They've lost five straight and now heading to Michigan State. But I'm excited for the showcase, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool. It's going to be great for the brand. Playing in Madison Square Gardens is exciting. I mean, and St. John's is not someone to be taken lightly. As we're recording this, they're giving Creighton all they can handle at Creighton. So, you know, that's a game that Marquette should win, but certainly has a possibility to lose. Plus, just the national, you know, the national eyes on that type of game. It's just a cool environment. I'm sure we'll probably see the baby blues and, you know, and begin all your national television and baby blue curse stories at that point in time. But it'll be a good game. It'll be a good measuring stick of where this team really is, because, like I said, that's a St. John's game we should win. And if they don't win, then I think this team really has even further than we think they need to be competitive next year.
By the way, as we've been talking here, I've quickly scrambled to, and I think I found the last time Marquette lost back-to-back home games. It was a real bummer, by the way. It was, of course, February 25th, 2009. That was the game against Connecticut when Dominic James broke his foot.
Oh.
And then Marquette then lost three straight after that, including senior night to Syracuse.
That's right.
So those were sad times.
Yes, those were sad times. And that was – though those sad times led to that oh-so-brief moment where you thought – we're going to win when rumors of Dominic James coming back for the
Missouri game,
the Missouri tournament game, which they almost won even with a clearly extremely hobbled Dominic James. Yeah. Stupid end line in Lazar.
Yeah, Lazar's feet just too dang big.
Yeah. if he was going to have those big of feet, you would have thought he would have been a little bit taller.
Yeah,
might have worked out better for him. But anyway, yeah.
But anyway, that was the last time Marquette lost back-to-back home games that I can find. I may have missed something, scrambled through it, but that is definitely the last time, I think. Because Marquette, they've had that long home court winning streak that stranded over the stretch two or three seasons, and they just had their conference home court winning streak snapped by Villanova. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the last time it happened was when Marquette sadly lost Dominic James that broken foot, and that was just such a bummer, just really deflated that team. But anyway, but back to the task at hand, beating St. John's. I would hope that that's a game Marquette wins. Marquette should probably be favored in that game no matter what happens against Providence. And, thing is, at that point, if they've lost to Providence heading into that game, I think, you know, as far as lifting spirits or whatever, it would be back to that thing I said earlier of just taking it one game at a time and just trying to improve and just try to get better every game and just see how many wins you can get, make sure you finish top six in the Big East, and so you're in best shape, the best shape you can possibly be in when you return to Madison Square Garden in March.
Right. And again, that's definitely the point where, you know, maybe you're not flipping a complete switch, but there should be more minutes going to some different players because, you know, in the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And
I think that's really just – that's kind of been the storyline of the season is just the lineup shuffle, really, and just seeing if these guys who aren't playing – play more, and if they do, if they're going to produce, because that's going to be, as you said earlier, the real deflating thing is if Buzz says, all right, here's John Dawson, you want John Dawson, here he is, and if he doesn't perform, everybody's gonna be like, oh geez,
right now what do.
Right,
you know, well, and that's the other thing is like, so okay, Steve Taylor's back, his offense is I think crucial to this, I think he can be key, but right. as we saw in Villanova, he's got a fairly long way to go defensively. So, you know, do you give him a lot of run to get it, let him work in defensively? I think you do.
I think so, too, yeah.
I think you do, but you're going to have to, quote-unquote, suffer the consequences for that.
Yeah, I liked the line. We saw it very briefly against Villanova, but I liked it for the brief time we saw it, that lineup of Dawson, Mayo, Jamil Wilson, Taylor, and Gardner. And I think that was Marquette's best offensive lineup. Now, they got beat a few times defensively, and I think that's why we didn't see it very much the rest of the game. But when Marquette needs a bucket against Providence, I would like to see that lineup a little more.
Right. Well, and I think that's a complete agreement on my end. I think at the bottom line for this whole thing is there is no magic bullet. There is no lever you're going to pull that the team's going to be really good. So from a fan base perspective, everyone should just get used to, all right, we're just tweaking. Really, at this point, it's a question of, do you want to go down swinging more offensively oriented, or do you want to go down swinging more defensively oriented? And I think the fans are generally leaning towards the offensive side, but that's what it's going to be. You're not going to put together a lineup that all of a sudden is going to click on both ends of the floor magically and turn this team into something it's not. It is where it is. You might see marginal increases over the rest of the season. So, you know, if you go with the offensive set, which is more Dawson, more Taylor, more Burton, hopefully more Juwan Johnson, then maybe they get a little better on the defensive end as they go. But it's not going to click overnight. We're going to have a really good team. It's just where it is.
Yeah, there's no quick fix, but we're just hoping for a little tweaking, and maybe that will get Marquette a few more wins as we look forward to February and then see what happens in March as well. Before we get out of here, Phil, predictions for the next couple games?
I think the Providence game is going to be a tight one, but I do think Marquette pulls that one out, and I do think they buck the trend and beat St. John's. Again, I'm not optimistic about this team, but I think these two games are ones that everyone's kind of out on them, and Marquette will come away with two victories against Providence and St. John's.
I hate to be like this, but I'm just going to be stubborn and say this anyway. I'm going to say the result will be the same for both games on a contingency. If Marquette does shuffle the lineup a little bit and guys like Dawson and Taylor and Mayo contribute a little more and they get to play a little more, Marquette will win both games. If we see 30-plus minutes of the same old of with Wilson and Thomas together and with Otule and Gardner together, if we see a lot of that, I think Marquette loses both games.
Ooh,
I think
that's fair. Firm but fair.
Yes, firm but fair. But I think Buzz might be ready to shake things up a little bit. I'm just going to be optimistic, and I think maybe he's going to look at that Georgetown game a little bit harder and say, you know what, maybe it might be time to open it up a little bit as the at-large bid is all but out the window. You want to get a bonus Super Bowl prediction before we get out of here?
Yeah, I actually I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I find the 12th man insufferable, but I think I do think Seattle wins. I think the weather will be a factor, and I think that favors the defensive team. So I'll take the number one defense over the number one offense.
Well, plus, I mean, I don't like Pete Carroll, but, I mean, how can you not cheer for Richard Sherman?
I actually kind of like Richard Sherman. You know, people may hate him, but if he's on your team, you absolutely love him.
Well, absolutely. As I said, after he had his little rant, if I wish to God I had a Packer or a player on the Packers that, one, could talk like that, and two, could back it up with actual talent.
I would trade every corner on the Chiefs roster for Richard Sherman.
So, well, plus it's Peyton Manning. He's got way too many commercials as it is. We don't need more of him in our lives if he wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but yeah, I think the Seahawks will win on Sunday. But anyway, thanks for listening to Scrambled Eggs here, everyone. Again, you can check us out on Twitter. Crack Sidewalks is, of course, the team Twitter handle. Individually, I am Joe McCann 3. Phil would be M-O-O-O-F 23. You can also find us on Facebook. There's a Scrambled Eggs page there. And you can, of course, download us on iTunes for your listening pleasure. Phil, final thoughts before we go?
Just
let me go. I just want to be out of here and be done with it.
I'm wrung like a sponge on this one. Let's just move on and hope for better days.
All right. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Seashells and balloons, everyone. And stay warm.